Happy Hanukkah and welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Hanukkah received more attention than usual this year when the first full day of the Jewish Festival of Lights coincided with the national holiday of Thanksgiving. Thanksgivica won't happen again for 77,000 years. Still, Hanukkah is probably the most familiar Jewish holiday for most Americans, even though it is far from the most important in terms of the Jewish religion. Joining us now to talk about that is Diane Ashton. She teaches religion at Rowan University. Her new book is entitled Hanukkah in America, A History. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Tell us first about what is Hanukkah in the Jewish religion. What is the story of Hanukkah that is remembered?
So Hanukkah commemorates the rededication of the temple in Jerusalem in 164 BCE by Jewish forces led by Judah Maccabee and his brothers, and they had to defeat the forces of an Assyrian king who then governed Judea and who really tried to wipe out Judaism. And he looted the temple, took out anything of value, quartered his horses in it, robbed the money for charity, really tried to eliminate Judaism. And so when the Maccabees and their followers defeated this king, they were able to rededicate the temple. And in that process, they had to build a new menorah. And a menorah is an oil lamp. And the menorahs in the temple have seven lights for 7 days of the week, and they remain burning constantly because they symbolize the presence of God. So the story goes that as they were trying to relight the menorah that they had built, they only found enough oil for 1 day. And miraculously, this little bit of oil burned for 8 days until more could be made. And so that's why we celebrate Hanukkah for 8 days. And we light candles each night.
You wrote that the seeds of your interest in writing this book may have been planted one night in your own childhood when the old tradition of Hanukkah kind of clashed with the new tradition that emerged among, mid-20th century Jewish American families, although things started to change 100 years earlier. Tell us about that story of your own experience.
I was very surprised by the whole thing. I was a little girl at the time, and my parents had taught me to light the menorah for our household, and I was very happy to do it. And a few nights later, my parents invited their cousins over for their Hanukkah evening, and my father's cousin lighted the menorah himself. And I burst into tears because I thought that was what I was supposed to be doing, and I wanted to do it. And my father was filming all of this on his home movie camera, so that's why I have a record of it. And I can see the look on my father's cousin's face of complete bewilderment. Why is this child crying? I'm just lighting the candle like I'm supposed to do. And what I realize now was that that was recording a moment when the traditions of male leadership and male responsibility for these kinds of domestic rituals were really shifting to a focus on children. And Hanukkah became, in many households, an occasion when children especially became the center of attention and became the focus of the celebration.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking with Diane Ashton, a religious scholar and author of a new book. It's called Hanukkah in America, A History. What we would love to hear from listeners with is their own stories of Hanukkah tradition, celebrations, and maybe their own examples of how that's changed over the last 50-odd years. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. Right. You talk about how the male relative lit the candle because that was the old tradition. I was also interested in the idea that you put forth that when they were getting ready to have you film the candle have you light the candle the first night, that your mother didn't dress up to celebrate Hanukkah like you did. It really was just about the kids back then, but it's not so much anymore. Just about the kids.
Well, no. In fact, now it's really become a whole family celebration. I think that this is because our lives are so busy and families are so desperate for occasions when they can come together and join in some kind of event that demands that they put down their attention to work and other responsibilities for a minute and pay attention to each other. And these moments, I think, have become even more valuable in our lives.
Just a few hundred years ago, Hanukkah was an obscure holiday with little record of celebration. Then in the mid-1800s, along came a pair of rabbis in, of all places, Cincinnati, Ohio. What did they make happen?
They were two exceptional leaders. Max Lilienthal and Isaac Mayer Wise were two reform leaders in Cincinnati who really wanted to revitalize Judaism in America and kind of light a fire under the Jewish population of the U.S. to pay more attention to Judaism. But they wanted it in their particular way, in the way that Reform was teaching. And so they felt very much at ease in coming up with new celebrations. What they did was they created a festival for children that would happen in the synagogues at Hanukkah. Because rabbis would be in control of what would happen in synagogues, they could create these events and make sure that their congregations would attend. And so these events were focused on the children. They had, of course, the candle lighting ceremony, but it's really a very brief ceremony. So they needed to build something else around it that would entertain the children and make them happy and teach them about Hanukkah. And so for that, they relied on the women of the congregation, the women teaching in religious schools, and the mothers of the children to create these events. What they didn't do was to stop with their own congregations, because each of these rabbis edited their own newspapers that were read by Jews around the country. They promoted these events among Jewish congregations around the country and urged their readers to do this in their own congregations and then to write in and tell all the readers in the country what was happening in their congregations. And so it became a tremendous way to promote this new activity among Jews all over the country and to communicate with each other about how they were doing it and how successful they were.
So how well did it catch on?
It caught on like wildfire. It really was a tremendous idea, because local congregations were really able to craft these events in the ways that best reflected what they were interested in. So in Baltimore, for example, congregations did the candlelighting ceremony, but then they also had children perform a play based on Little Red Riding Hood. Well, that has nothing to do with Hanukkah, but it's what their congregation and their children were interested in.
And is there still a tradition of that?
Of Little Red Riding Hood?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Okay.
But you still have this promotion of the idea that Hanukkah is really what local communities can make of it. The core of the candlelighting ceremony occurs everywhere, but then surrounding that is a wide variety of activities.
Now, there are all kinds of different traditions that emerged. There's a really interesting one is it New Orleans, just New Orleans, or Louisiana, the whole state, how they decorate their doors?
This was in New Orleans in the early 1960s, and this was something that I found in the records of the Women's League for Conservative Judaism. So some Jewish women in New Orleans who were members of both the Garden Club of New Orleans and the Women's League for Conservative Judaism would decorate their front doors for Hanukkah. And what they would do is first cover the door with either brown paper or wrapping paper, and then they would use very humble items to glue onto the door to create symbols of the holiday. So it might be a big menorah, it might be a symbol of a Torah. One was a scene of Moses receiving the Ten Commandments on Mount Sinai. And they would make this out of like beans and dried macaroni and Mardi Gras beads, you know, very ordinary little things. But then next to the door, they would put a sign explaining the symbols. So I thought this was a really marvelous activity because it showed not only that they were putting a Jewish emblem on their homes, but they were using it as a way to communicate to their non-Jewish neighbors something about Judaism and Jewish belief. And I thought that was just wonderful.
We often hear about how Jewish people, particularly kids, are jealous around Christmas time. They're jealous of Christmas. They're jealous of the Santa Claus stuff, all the gifts, all the decorations everywhere you go. It's Christmas, Christmas, Christmas. I don't know if jealous is the right word, or sometimes I feel like sometimes people are irritated by it, overwhelmed by it. But what about that emotional reaction to Christmas in the Jewish community?
It's very interesting. I think adults are overwhelmed by it. But children who go to public school throughout most of American history have encountered a lot of Christmas in the public schools. There are trees, there are special assemblies where Christmas songs are sung. Sometimes there's even instruction in Christian belief. And so Jewish parents were very concerned about how their children were responding to all of this. Children were very confused. They were clearly being told that some great event was happening for their Christian classmates. And so Jewish people began to feel that they really needed to create something for the Jewish children so that they would feel happy to be Jews at this time of year and not be kind of encouraged to be envious and to think that only Christian kids have a good time.
I can remember back in the 60s when they did have a Christmas tree in our grade school. Of course, that's very unlikely to happen these days.
Well, it really depends where in the country you live.
Yeah, absolutely. My guest is Diane Ashton. She's a religious scholar and the author of a new book. It's called Hanukkah in America, A History. We'll continue our conversation when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Okay, welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I am not a latke, but we are talking about Hanukkah with Diane Ashton. She's a religious scholar and the author of a new book. It's called Hanukkah in America, A History. If you want to share some of your memories of Hanukkah celebrations as a child and maybe how it's changed over time for you, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org or check out our Facebook page and post your comment there. Diane Ashton, the Jewish American tradition of, well, before we get to that, I was interested in the book you talk about how Jews during different periods in American history interpreted the Hanukkah story differently. And I wondered why that happened and what were some of the interpretations?
Well, one of the things that really impressed me when I was working on this book was how much religion is about reinterpreting stories so that they remain relevant with each generation. And I think that that's probably what made the biggest impact on me and changed my understanding of how religion works in the U.S. in particular, that it has to change or it'll die. And so when I looked at how the Hanukkah stories were told and retold to different generations, I saw always that people who were working with the stories were always relating those stories to something very current in Jews' lives. For example, the 19th century in the U.S. was a time when there was great debate about how Judaism would survive in the U.S. Jews had not lived under these kinds of circumstances before where they were free to practice their religion, but had no support for the community institution. Things were wide open. You had almost no rabbis in the country until fairly late in the century. And so how was Judaism actually going to survive? What happened in the middle of the century was that a debate emerged among a few rabbis, the people who were the religious leaders of local communities. How could we move forward? Who should be our leaders? What vision of Judaism would be the best and most efficacious for life in the U.S.? And so each side in that debate began to talk about themselves as Maccabees, just as the Maccabees in the ancient Jewish world were the leaders who allowed Judaism to survive, who led the way forward in defeating someone who was trying to wipe out Judaism, and gave Judaism a path to the future. So each of these contingents in the U.S. described themselves as Maccabees for the modern age. And of course, they had those debates in the Jewish newspapers because they were trying to convince the Jews of the country to follow their various sides. And so that became what I saw as the first real education of American Jews about the importance of the Maccabees and how relevant their story was for American Jews. That was really remarkable to me.
Bill in Clintonville, I think you have a related comment. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Thank you. I just wanted to say I'd hope that however we Jews celebrate Hanukkah, whether it's with a lot of gifts or with lighting the menorah or whatever, that we don't focus. We don't focus so much on this idea of, okay, a lamp burned for 8 days instead of one day and it was a miracle. Not, we should focus not on that, but on the core value that the Hanukkah story teaches us, and that is religious freedom. The Jews fought for religious freedom 2,000 years ago. Sometimes you have to fight for your freedom, and that you have to be proud of your own religion. You don't let a dictator tell you what to believe about God. And that's what we should be focusing on. And in that way, it's not just a story for the Jews. It's a story for everybody, because this is an American value, religious freedom. If you want to be Christian, you can be Christian. If you want to be Jewish, you can be Jewish. If you want to be Muslim, you can be Muslim. If you want to not believe in God, you are free in America to believe that and in a way celebrate that. So that's what I'd hope we would talk about when we talk about Hanukkah, so that it becomes more of a universal ideal. And I think that's true with a lot of the Jewish holidays, like Passover, where we celebrate Jews' freedom from slavery 2,000 years ago. But it's a universal theme that no one should be a slave today. So that's what I'd hope we'd focus on a lot more than kind of the theological story about a lamp that burned for 8 days.
Diane Ashton?
Well, the caller is really voicing something that I saw happening for a great deal of American Jewish history, and that is that American values become Jewish values. So freedom of religion is something that American Jews place great store in. We really think that this is a fabulous value of the U.S. and one of the things that makes the United States such an important and wonderful country. And people have been describing the Maccabees fighting for freedom of religion for more than a century. And that's really part of how American Jews, many American Jews, really understand the significance of Hanukkah. And the caller is absolutely right that that's something that American Jews really value.
Bill, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
Take care.
Mm-hmm.
Bye. So Jewish American tradition of Hanukkah often is viewed in terms of children, Diane Ashton, but it also changed the role of Jewish women and mothers in the religion and kind of started to give them a greater role across the board, right?
Well, yes, it did. But this is really part of a much larger movement that began in the 19th century in industrializing parts of the world where households were no longer economic units, when factories drew men out of the household to work long hours. And so these sentimental domestic festivals became really important occasions for bringing families together and for women to create those occasions and display their skills and to exercise a new importance for bringing their family together, for creating emotional ties among their family members and creating occasions when those ties would be reinforced. And so Hanukkah fits perfectly into that larger movement. As Jewish men worked long hours, the American clock and work calendar demand a lot of hours of work, we all know. Fathers were not always home when small children would be either having dinner or even going to bed. And so Hanukkah's evening candle lighting became something that mothers governed, and mothers would create these festivals in the homes when they would decorate the house, they would cook special foods, they would invite children's playmates over for parties, and it fell more and more to Jewish mothers to create Hanukkah domestic occasions.
And did that did that also make
for a greater role overall for women in the Jewish religion?
Well, in a sense, yes, because this was not only happening with Hanukkah, it was happening with other kinds of Jewish domestic festivals and domestic celebrations. So cumulatively, yes, women's role became more and more valued as Jewish domestic life became more and more valued.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm talking with Diane Ashton. She's a religious scholar and author of a new book. It's called Hanukkah in America, A History. Diane, you said that you began your investigation into the holiday's popularity with the assumption that few people choose to do things that hold no meaning for them. And you said that there are four foundational conditions that allowed Hanukkah to become so popular in America. Could you go over those?
Yeah, I think that there are really four things, four elements of Hanukkah that really together made it the occasion that it is. And one is, of course, its timing, that it comes at the time of the year when American society as a whole is celebrating and celebrating in the way that Hanukkah is celebrated. That is a domestic occasion when families gather for something that is fun, and to reinforce religious beliefs. So the timing of Hanukkah was important. Second is its story, the story of liberation, of fighting for religious, not only their own freedom, but religious freedom in general. And God's rescue is also part of Hanukkah's story. And so those ideas became very important to American Jews in various times of their history. And let's say, in particular, the time in during World War II, when the idea of God rescuing Jews who seemed unlikely to be able to defend themselves against a large empire that was trying to wipe them out, that became a really important story for Jewish children and for Jews to comfort themselves with as they dealt with Nazism. So the story became something that was always made relevant to Jewish life. Third is domesticity. The fact that Hanukkah is celebrated in Jewish homes where people are really in control of how it's celebrated meant that each family could create the celebration that was most meaningful to them. They could tailor it to their own tastes, their own desires, their own ideas of what would be fun for them. And so they were in control of this celebration, and that was important. That meant that it could stay alive and stay meaningful to each family. And finally is just Hanukkah's joyousness. This is a fun holiday, and the reading for Hanukkah tells us that we are to sing and rejoice, and music and fun things are part of the celebration. And so those four elements together, I think, meant that Hanukkah was going to be something that could be recreated in each era of American Jewish life as something that was important to each succeeding generation of Jews.
Do you ever, can you get over all the different iterations of Jewish or Hanukkah-related music that's out there now? The first one we heard at the top of the hour was a rap version of Hanukkah, Oh Hanukkah. And then we started the first segment with a bluesy dreidel song by Julie Silver, very famous musician. And also I Am a Latke. was the beginning. There were a million songs out there. There was no shortage of Hanukkah songs.
No shortage of Hanukkah songs at all. And that, again, is part of the Hanukkah celebration, that it is a time of singing and music. And yet, it's a very simple holiday. There's not a lot of complexity to this holiday. Mm-hmm. And so it's not surprising that we get songs like I Am a Latke. there are I Am a Dreidel. There are lots of songs for children. And in the 50s, when American music industry was producing long-playing records, one of the things that I saw becoming very popular as gifts for children were long-playing records of Hanukkah music. Mm. And some of these records were not just things that children would listen to, but the songs would tell them to get up and march around the room and spin like a dreidel. And so they were part of the children's festival. So it's singing and playing all combined together.
Where did the dreidel custom come from, or tradition?
The dreidel was a toy that emerged in Central Europe, in the area of around what's today Germany, in the 1500s. And the dreidel is a modification of that. On each of its four sides are letters that stand for the phrase in Hebrew, a great miracle happened there. And they are then adapted to the rules of a very simple game. You spin the dreidel, and depending on what letter it falls on, you either put in, if you're playing with peanuts, you put in a peanut or into the central pot, or take out a peanut, or take the whole pot. It's a very simple little game.
We've always played with gold-covered coins. I mean, gold-covered chocolate coins.
Right, right. Well, then I would have the problem of eating.
Yes, exactly. A little bit of a drawback there. Speaking of, where the dreidel tradition comes from, let's talk just a bit about what Hanukkah means in other countries with older Jewish tradition. Is it catching on there like a lot of other Western traditions do, or have they still resisted this pull?
Well, of course, Hanukkah is celebrated everywhere Jews live because
right.
it is a mandated holiday. It's just not so important. It's categorized as a minor festival according to Judaism. So this aggrandizement and great elaboration of Hanukkah that we have in the U.S. Really is dependent on a consumer economy. And so if you've got a commercial consumer economy in other parts of the world, you're going to get holidays, because holidays are big business in the U.S., you're going to get various holidays elaborated upon. And Hanukkah may emerge then. But it's that holiday business is really much larger in the U.S. than in other places. So in Israel, for example, people will eat jelly donuts for Hanukkah. I mean, the only thing that makes it a Hanukkah food is that it's fried in oil. So anything can work as long as it's fried. So in Israel, they'll eat jelly donuts. But the holiday itself is really not a huge grand event. It has its minor place in the religious calendar as it is normally assigned. You don't really find this level of elaboration of Hanukkah in other parts of the world.
Do people, when they're visiting here from other parts of the world, find the Hanukkah celebration, the tradition of celebration in the United States, obnoxious, strange, weird, idiotic?
I think they're surprised. But individuals differ on how they're going to respond to all this. Some people think, hey, it's a lot of fun, and other people are put off by the commercialism, just as with Christmas, many people mm-hmm. are really put off by the level of commercialism. And I think that's a hazard that American society runs in general. The commercialism is something that people can be very ambivalent about.
When you were a child, did you feel pressured by the Christmas tradition? Did you want to go to school the next day and tell everyone what you received for Hanukkah so that they knew you were getting some booty too?
Interesting. There were only 10 Jewish children in my entire grade in my public school. So I was very aware of Christmas.
Yeah.
Very aware of it. And Hanukkah was a kind of consolation. And my parents were, of course, very aware that that was the situation I was facing. And they put a lot of effort into making Hanukkah a lot of fun. And all the Jewish children in my religious school, really, because we were all suburban kids in Buffalo, mm-hmm. We all kind of faced the same kind of situation. And so we all talked about Hanukkah much as the Christian kids talked about what they received for Christmas.
Sure. My guest is Diane Ashton. She's a religious scholar and author of a new book. It's called Hanukkah in America, A History. We'll continue our conversation when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. That is Ocho Candelicas, a Latino Sephardic song made famous by Flora Yacoda. Obviously, eight candles, I think, is the English translation for that. We're talking about Hanukkah and the American tradition of Hanukkah with Diane Ashton. She's a religious scholar and author of a new book called Hanukkah in America, A History. If you have a memory of Hanukkah celebration as a child, maybe you want to talk about how it's changed for you and how you've changed the celebration over the years, please give us a call, 614-292-8513. Or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Let's go back a little bit to something that Bill from Clintonville brought up, and that is the role or lack thereof of government and how much it's part of the equation of Hanukkah and how it's evolved or changed in the United States. That's something that traditionally Jews have been very controlled by governments over the centuries.
Oh, indeed. Indeed. Well, that's why Jews in the United States are so grateful for religious freedom, because it's such an unusual experience for Jews, for most of humanity. But for religious minorities, having the government not be involved in religion and not supporting any religion and not enforcing any religion's laws is an amazing experience for a religious minority to really be free to follow your own traditions and not face any kind of political or legal problems for that.
Is there any mixed emotion then about the public Hanukkah displays, the public menorah displays and celebrations, on government property and that sort of thing? I know some people obviously love it and are thrilled about it, and some people aren't as thrilled about it.
There really are mixed feelings about that. And for that very reason, Jews know that their freedoms in the U.S. are based on the government not being involved in religion and not allowing financial support for government displays of religion. And so when there are these very large menorahs in public squares, Jews have misgivings about, is this really the right thing to be doing? Well, what happened was this, of course, went to the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. And they concluded that because the menorah does not have an image of God, and usually these are placed near a Christmas tree when there's a large Christmas tree in a public square, particularly in places where there is a fairly decent-sized Jewish population. The menorah might be placed near the Christmas tree. And the Supreme Court decided that when these two items are placed together, they really signify religious freedom and cultural diversity. They really are not religious messages, because neither item is actually a depiction of a god, as opposed to a nativity scene, which does depict a god. So that's a very different kind of religious item. But when a Christmas tree is in a church or next to a nativity scene, then it is a religious item. So placement really has a lot to do with how the legal foundation for these displays are allowed or not allowed.
Margaret in Worthington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Margaret.
Hi. Thank you for having me on. I just had a kind of amusing anecdote, and I'm sorry to have to relay this in the middle of all this serious discussion.
No, not at all.
But I left New York at the age of 7 and a half, and we moved out here to Ohio due to my dad's health. And while we were still in New York, I was about 5. My brother and I convinced my mother, and we had gone to a public school, as the author mentions. And, of course, we were exposed. I mean, we were probably like 5 kids in the whole school out of about 500. So we begged our parents for a tree and when we were little, and she got it. And my grandmother was an Orthodox Jew, and she was coming over to visit. So my mother quickly stashed it in their bedroom and covered it with a sheet where she wouldn't see it. And, of course, being 5 years old, when you're told not to do something, that's the first thing to do. So I took her hand. I said, "Look what we got, Grandpa." And to my grandmother's, she may have been chagrined, but she never let on. And she never jumped on my mother or criticized us or anything. So it was all good. So that's pretty much it. And I think my brother was older, so he threw in a comment about how some kids told him that the tree is just a pagan symbol anyway. So, it always helps.
Yeah, there is the Hanukkah bush. I don't know how big of a deal that is nowadays. Diane Ashton, is that kind of hung on?
Actually, I think the phrase Hanukkah bush was something Jews used really in the 60s and 70s. But that seems, I really haven't heard that phrase.
Right.
Now, if people want to have a Christmas tree, they just say, "We have a Christmas tree," and that's it.
You know, when you throw a lot of Star Wars ornaments on it, especially the talking one,
right,
"Luke, I am your father," it's not really religious. You know?
Right. Exactly.
It's just a seasonal affectation.
It's a lot of fun, and I just like seeing all the lights and everything. It's so so great.
Yeah.
But anyway, thank you for having the program, and I'm really enjoying it.
Thank you, Margaret. Thanks for the call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
If you have a memory you'd like to share, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Diane Ashton, you mentioned the Hallmark 2007 collection of Hanukkah cards, all in the color scheme of blue and white or silver, recalling, of course, the Israeli flag. But the commercialization of those colors has been pronounced. It's sort of everywhere.
This is so amazing to me that our holidays are all color-coded. If you shop in any grocery store, the holiday card aisle, the greeting card aisle with the paper goods, in the summer holidays, it's all red, white, and blue.
Uh-huh.
If by Halloween, it's orange and black. Hanukkah is blue and white. Christmas is red and green. Easter is pastel colors. Valentine's Day is red. I mean, it's all color-coded, and it's great merchandising, but it means that people who are shopping are exposed to all of this stuff, and they can immediately see, oh, yes, there's the Hanukkah material right next to the Christmas material. And
there's
the
kosher food section, right?
Yeah, and it's the same kind of stuff in a different color.
It's grown. When did it really take off commercially, the Hanukkah theme?
When I found that was the Hanukkah's commercialization really began in the ethnic economy, the Jewish stores, long before it made it into Hallmark. The first greeting cards for Hanukkah were really created by a women's organization called the National Federation of Temple Sisterhoods, who were the sisterhoods of Reform congregations around the country. And they contacted a greeting card manufacturer and arranged for him to produce originally just two cards, and they sold them in their congregations. And then they were successful, and so the following year it was four cards. But this was in the 1920s. So that really was promoted as a Jewish activity decades before Hanukkah, before Hallmark decided that Hanukkah would be another holiday in their arsenal of products. Also, Hanukkah menorahs and Hanukkah candles and special holiday dinners for Hanukkah in Jewish restaurants and kosher restaurants. So it really emerged in the ethnic economy before it became something that the regular economy took over.
I haven't seen them, but you did refer to like whole catalogs of menorahs.
Oh, yes. There's a Jewish catalog company called The Place for Everything Jewish, Hamakor Judaica in Hebrew, and they put out catalogs of stuff to buy, mezuzahs and candles and any kind of item that you would use to make a celebration at home. And of course, their Hanukkah catalog is by far the largest and is sent to more people. And they have page after page after page of different kinds of Hanukkah menorahs, everything from those produced using Disney characters to items to menorahs that show items used in your favorite sporting activity, so it can be baseball bats or hockey clubs.
That cracks me up.
And yeah, I mean, it's all kinds of things. As long as it holds the right number of candles, there's no restriction on what the design can be.
And boy, I've seen some incredible menorahs over the years at art festivals and that sort of thing. So amazing. So beautiful.
Yeah, artists have used menorahs also as a way to make really gorgeous items.
Rick in Grandview, you're on the air. Hi, Rick.
Hi, Ann. Thank you for the program.
You're welcome.
Full disclosure, as I think you say, I'm not Jewish.
Okay.
But I thank you for answering several of my questions about why blue and white and about the Hanukkah bush. I thought my high school friends were pulling a joke on me about that. But my question was about Hanukkah in other countries, in Europe, did it just explode over here? And was there any conflict among the Reform and the Conservative and Orthodox communities?
It's primarily exploded in the United States because holidays are such big business in the United States, and because religion is really a significant factor in American culture, more so than in other secular countries in the industrial West. So that's one reason that it's so important here. Can you repeat the rest of your question?
Oh, Rick?
Oh, yeah. Was there theological conflict between
well, the denominational of religions in the U.S. means that reformers usually talk to reformers and conservative Jews talk to conservative Jews and Orthodox Jews talk to Orthodox Jews. They do some things differently. You can see the concern for maintaining culture, the customs of Europe among Orthodox Jews. They will more likely send their children to Jewish day schools than to public schools, so they're not really encountering Christmas trees and Christmas carols. But Hanukkah is definitely something that is that is, of course, celebrated, and the children in Jewish day schools, Orthodox children, will often do crafts for Hanukkah, making their own menorahs and other kinds of items, and then they'll bring those home, and they'll become part of the family's Hanukkah celebration.
Thanks a lot, Rick, for that call. Lighting the candles is an old tradition, of course, but gift giving for Hanukkah is not. Is that just a directly a cast off from the Christmas tradition and nothing much more complicated than that?
It's not very complicated. It's not complicated. Christmas presents emerged because the American economy was becoming a consumer economy in the late 19th century. We have department stores promoting this in the mid and late 19th century. And so it's part of the general push in American culture to get women to shop and to buy things for their family.
We just finished up Thanksgivica last week. What did you make of that, how the public responded to it, how the media responded to it? Some people thought it was no big deal, but then it ended up being a lot of fun to talk about. And, you know, to mix those two holidays was a lot of fun for people, I thought.
I think it was fun, and I think it focused everybody on food even more than people are normally focused on food.
If that's possible.
If that's possible, gave us another reason to focus on food. But, of course, I think it was kind of a slow news cycle. We weren't talking about, you know, terrorist bombings, I'm happy to say.
Uh-huh.
And so it gave us another kind of fun, joyous thing to be talking about. And I think everybody appreciated that.
There are some people are astounded at that 77,000 years mark, that it'll be another 77,000 years before there's another, where the holidays coincide in that way. But I remember I was at an event a couple months ago and someone piped up and said it's going to be the first time in 125 years or something, and again in another 77,000. And this, they're really excited because it means they're going to get decent food on Hanukkah. And that really caught my attention and kind of cracked me up a little bit. But it did make me think about how different the calendars are and how amazing and mystical that calendar must be to be so different and so divergent in that way.
Well, I think the 77,000 is a joke, really. I think that it's a gross exaggeration. Certainly having the first light of Hanukkah be the day before Thanksgiving is very early, but there's really not a lot of mystery to it. The Jewish calendar is basically a lunar calendar with some interpolations to keep the holidays basically in the season where they're supposed to be. And the American calendar, of course, is a straight solar calendar, so they don't match up. Hanukkah will float between sort of a late November, very late November, through December. But there have been occasions when Hanukkah is the day after Thanksgiving, and that's really not nearly as rare as people have made out.
Okay. So you can eat leftovers.
You can enjoy them, yes, indeed.
What did you do to celebrate Thanksgivica? Any changes?
I had Thanksgiving. Friends of ours were visiting from Utah, and we made a huge Thanksgiving feast. And then I had a Hanukkah party on Saturday night when we ate latkes. So we really didn't eat the latkes with the Thanksgiving stuff because Thanksgiving already had sweet potatoes, mashed potatoes, and stuffing. And I think latkes would have been a bit much.
Real quick, we have an email from Debbie. When my children were little, I made a Hanukkah tree for them. It took a branch from a purple lilac bush, put it in a plaster of Paris, and painted it white. Well, in about a week, it started sprouting leaves. And then a week later, it actually started to bloom white flowers. We called this the true Hanukkah miracle. Diane Ashton, thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Diane Ashton, she's a religious scholar and author of a new book, Hanukkah in America, A History. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.